Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. And from Florida Tax Watch, the Florida Council of 100, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plan, proud sponsors of the Prudential Productivity Awards program, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas since 1989. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A Florida inmate's grisly death and potential cover-up have led to calls for the federal government to intervene.
The allegations here, I think, are severe enough that there should be a criminal civil rights investigation as well as potential prosecution.
Also this week, we'll hear different sides weigh in about a new website launched this week to track Florida's child deaths.
I am trying to move the agency to a place where never again will the agency be questioned in terms of trying to hide or shelter data from folks. I think we need to be very open and upfront with folks.
We'll also check out the oil drilling that's been taking place in Southwest Florida and discover that wildfires are actually a good thing when it comes to a certain rare species of Florida bird. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to Capitol Report. Human rights and faith-based groups are asking the federal government to investigate how Florida treats its mentally ill prisoners. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the groups say no one is being held accountable for a man's gruesome death 2 years ago. A warning here, some of the details in this report are graphic and could be disturbing to some listeners.
Most people who've heard what happened to Darren Rainey in prison likely know the story because of a Miami Herald investigation that's been unfolding since May. Reporter Julie Brown talked with other inmates and a prison nurse who were at Dade Correctional Institution in June of 2012. Rainey, a 50-year-old mentally ill man, was serving a 2-year sentence for cocaine possession. Other prisoners told Brown he had gone to the bathroom in his cell, and as a punishment, he was placed in a shower with no internal temperature control. Florida Justice Institute Executive Director Randall Berg says the water that killed Rainey was hot enough to burn off large pieces of his skin.
It's common in institutions like correctional facilities or hospitals or whatever to have, you know, hot water heaters that go much higher than you would have in a home.
He says the water had been as hot as 180 degrees, according to the nurse's evaluation. The Justice Institute litigates on behalf of incarcerated people, and Berg says it's not directly involved in Rainey's case, but he believes what happened is indicative of a wider problem.
Mentally ill people will often act out the manifestations of their mental illness, and instead of providing them with a reasonable accommodation, which is required by the law, they instead tend to punish them.
The Florida Justice Institute has joined the American Civil Liberties Union and other groups calling for the federal Justice Department to investigate Rainey's death and what Berg believes is a pattern of mistreatment. ACLU of Florida Executive Director Howard Simon says the federal government must get involved when states violate people's constitutional rights.
Everything that the state has done in terms of looking at the treatment of the mentally ill in Florida prisons is all prospective.
He says after 2 years, Florida has not held anyone accountable for Rainey's death. Through a spokeswoman, the Department of Corrections declined an interview, but issued a statement saying its internal inspector general and Miami-Dade Police Department are still investigating the incident, and it would take immediate action based on the findings. But Simon says it's troubling that it appears people who knew what happened swept it under the rug until recent media attention.
But that is not the way in which this state should be governed. We have a situation in which what is now reported is that prison guards have killed people. They have apparently bragged about the fact that they can kill inmates and get away with it.
The Florida Justice Institute's Berg says mentally ill inmates have the right to therapy and medication, and they should never be punished for their illness. He says because the state's prison medical services have been privatized, it's harder to ensure proper training to accommodate mental illness. But he hopes the Justice Department's intervention would spur on changes. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
The state's Child Welfare Agency launched a website this week that coincides with a newly signed law that will take effect on Tuesday. As Sasha Cordner reports, the rollout of the Florida Department of Children and Families' new way to track child deaths comes at the same time some are renewing their call to investigate the agency's integrity.
Just as he did when he signed the so-called immigrant tuition bill into law, Governor Rick Scott toured the state as part of his re-election campaign to tout some of the other bills he's approved lately. The Caring for Families tour highlights early learning program funding as well as help for children with disabilities and foster kids.
Whether it's making sure we have all the child protective investigators at DCF we need, we're going to do the right thing for our children.
Scott is talking about one of the many provisions contained in a sweeping bill overhauling Florida's Child Welfare Agency, which includes funding for the Florida Department of Children and Families to hire 270 more child protective investigators. It's all part of a comprehensive reform effort to address a troubled child welfare system after a series of investigations by the Miami Herald found a spate of child abuse-related deaths that occurred under DCF's watch. Last fall, that probe found that child welfare authorities had overlooked dangerous signs and most of the 40 reviewed children who died were younger than five.
So from the get-go, we were interested in the child, especially children who were under four, who cannot speak for themselves, cannot defend themselves in these awful situations where parents were drug abusers, had mental health issues, and were basically dysfunctional.
That's Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel, who was charged with working on the Senate's effort to reform Florida's Child Welfare Agency. That effort includes encouraging child protective investigators to have a social worker background and making sure an assistant secretary of child welfare is appointed to manage child protection and welfare services.
Some of the things we put into place was more accountability and transparency measures. We have a critical incident response team. If there is an unfortunate death, a team would come together, not from the district where it happens, but an outside team would come together and look at it. There is also a website that would report all deaths.
And ahead of the new law taking effect Tuesday, DCF has just launched that website called the Child Fatality Prevention Website to track all child deaths in the state. And the person now in charge of implementing that is new Interim Secretary Mike Carroll.
We're dealing right now with some issues that I inherited, one of them around transparency. But I am trying to move the agency to a place where never again will the agency be questioned in terms of trying to hide or shelter data or information from folks. I think we need to be very open and upfront with folks.
Carroll has been on the job for almost 2 months after taking over for Esther Jacobo. Jacobo was the interim head of the agency until the end of the 2014 legislative session. Since Scott's first DCF chief, David Wilkins, resigned about a year ago amid the initial reports of the child deaths under DCF's watch. Speaking recently on Florida Channel's Face-to-Face program, Carroll says he believes the website will become the leading website in the nation in posting and notifying communities about state child deaths.
But it will go far beyond that because we're going to put everything in that database that would let local communities know what the cause of death was, what the circumstances around the death were, and on every single death we do a report around that death that outlines what the department's prior contact was with that family, if we had some. All of that will be released. The beauty of it, I think, is it's really an interactive website where it will provide statewide data, but it's also going to be county by county. So you can click on the state of Florida. If you live in Hillsborough, you can just see Hillsborough's data.
Carroll says his ultimate goal is to eliminate preventable child deaths, including unsafe sleep and drowning, part of several ongoing DCF campaigns. Meanwhile, Senator Sobel says even with these efforts, it's important to note that the department was obligated to put together the website.
That is a step in the right direction by the department, but they're mandated to do it now. And there are lots of mandates in this bill that will make the department more accountable. And the spirit of the law is basically in the best interest of the child.
Sobel has since renewed her call asking the governor for an independent investigation into claims DCF employees were intentionally told to cover up deaths involving children under state care. Carroll has rejected those allegations, calling them, quote, misperceptions that he's already taken action to address.
Our work is complex. It is often misunderstood, sometimes misrepresented. And so when we shoot ourselves in the foot and create those misperceptions ourselves, it's kind of infuriating. So that's where I was. I did take action against the administrator down there, not because I thought that he was unethical or not that I thought he was destroying records, because the fact of the matter, he wasn't. But he did make a decision, I thought, that put the department in a light where now we're having to defend ourselves against a perception that's not accurate. And it doesn't help our cause.
In one of the Herald's child death investigations, a Southeast Region Child Welfare Administrator emailed an employee to delete an incident report, stating that she would, quote, advise why later. Carroll says he suspended the manager for that region for 2 days. Meanwhile, a grand jury has also accused DCF administrators of, quote, intentionally and deliberately manipulating investigations into child abuse-related deaths, but did find the department has been making strides. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, an on-the-scene report from the site of oil drilling in the southwest part of Florida.
It doesn't take a lot of imagination to have some concerns about lights, noise, trucks, and roads.
And Florida wildlife officials say without wildfires, the Florida scrub jays' habitat would dwindle and possibly disappear.
Many of the plants and animals in Florida, in fact, most of them, need that fire regime, that fire process.
Controversy has ravaged a southwest Florida town for the better part of a year over a renewed push to explore for oil in an underground reserve that stretches like a belt between Fort Myers and Miami. That push and the actions of the companies doing the oil exploration have some residents and environmental groups at war over what they see as an effort to bring fracking to Florida. We have two reports on the matter, the first from Lynn Hatter.
At the Corkscrew Swamp Conservatory in Naples, ancient bald cypress trees stretch to the sky, and a variety of birds engage in dangerous games of chicken with alligators hiding in the bogs. Signs warning of bear and panther crossings are common. The swamp has become a focal point in a local fight over oil.
It doesn't take a lot of imagination to have some concerns about lights, noise, trucks, and roads that are associated with large-scale production.
Brad Cornell represents Audubon, Florida, in the Western Everglades region of the state, and a place where Florida's endangered panthers call home. They share Corkscrew Swamp with bears and wood storks. The area sits on top of an underground oil reserve known as the Sunnyland Trend, and a few miles away from the swamp is the source of the concern.
It's not that thing, is it?
That could be, yep. That could be what's left over.
In the distance, across fields of crops and tall trees, stand 4 stadium-grade floodlights looming over an otherwise flat landscape. This is what remains of an oil exploration rig run by an outfit out of Texas called the Dan A. Hughes Company. The company was fined in December by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection for what critics have called fracking-like activities. Fracking is the term given to a controversial oil extraction method that uses chemicals and high pressure to break up rock in order to get to the oil underneath. Some people believe it's responsible for an increase in earthquakes and contamination of groundwater in states like Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, and the Dakotas. Questions about what happened at the Hughes site have created a firestorm in Collier County, where back in May, the county commission decided to challenge the state over the unauthorized activity. Here's Commissioner Fred Coyle.
We're new to this process, but pumping chemicals into the ground to extract the oil in Collier County, I think, has very serious implications for the safety of our residents.
The distinction between the activity that occurred here at this well and the activity that's occurring in other states is that the Dan A. Hughes company used substantially lower pressure at this site than what is found in other hydraulic fracturing activities.
That's DEP Deputy Director Danielle Irwin during a conference call with reporters. The department has started testing the area around the well for signs of contamination. And when asked by reporters why the department waited so long, first to disclose the December incident and then to monitor the groundwater, DEP Wastewater Director Jorge Caspary said it's not too late to start.
I think with the detection limits that we have in the instruments, we would be able to trace. The detection limits are so low in the instruments that we would be able to detect parts per billion. So we feel confident that the testing we're going to be producing or doing and the analysis we're going to undertake for way over 100 chemicals will tell us what's going on there.
But the effort is not reassuring people who are becoming increasingly suspicious of Dan A. Hughes, DEP, and the company that owns the land, Collier Resources. Among the local activists jumping into the fray, Karen Dwyer, a former English teacher, decades-long Collier resident and activist.
Our worry is that when we started looking at the state legislation about this, they told us that there are no regulations in place, that the regulations have not kept up with extreme extraction.
A major issue the Dwyers, along with the Collier County Commission and environmentalists like the Audubon Society have, is the impact to the water. Companies have to drill through the region's aquifer to get to the oil, and if that drilling causes contamination, the results could be calamitous for the people, plants, and animals in and around the site. Meanwhile, the Hughes oil well debacle has only added more fuel to a separate battle over a proposed oil exploration site, which will back up to a neighborhood, and has at least one couple considering a move elsewhere. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Back on Capitol Report, we're speaking with Ashley Lopez with member station WGCU in Fort Myers as a follow-up to Lynn Hatter's story on what's been going on relative to fossil fuel exploration down in the greater southwest Florida area. Ashley, you've been following this since forever, and even though this has engendered an awful lot of controversy here in Tallahassee and elsewhere, this is really not a new story, is it?
Well, I mean, it's been going on at least since I first got here. I remember one of my very first few stories about 2 years ago was covering interest in possibly exploring for oil, you know, since the advent of horizontal drilling here in southwest Florida. There's always been oil wells here, but new technology has sort of spurred a lot of interest in maybe getting more oil than we've ever gotten before. So there's just this elevated interest as of late. But really, I mean, this has been going on for decades.
You leverage in then all of the controversy concerning fracking, whether it's in the Marcellus Shale Formation in central Pennsylvania or out west, the Keystone XL pipeline, these other issues that are being leveraged in on this, and you just have a real microscope that the area is being put under right now. What kind of other media interest have you seen in this story?
It started with just, you know, sort of local reporters sort of just looking at the sort of not in my backyard aspect of oil drilling really close to homes here in Naples, in the Naples area. But yeah, there's been a lot of national attention because fracking's become this like international, you know, phenomenon of, you know, earthquakes in places they've never been before. People lighting their water on fire because of gas leaks. I mean, I think those documentaries, Gasland, have really, you know, inspired a lot of concern. So anytime there's mention of fracking in places there didn't used to be, it's getting a lot of interest. And I think that's where a lot of the fear in this area is coming from. But, you know, originally when we were having conversations about possible fracking in Florida, a lot of geologists told me that probably wasn't even going to be a concern because the limestone is so porous down here. But, you know, the recent revelation that the Dan A. Hughes Company actually used a method very similar to fracking in southwest Florida It's just sort of opened this conversation up again, and it's become a real firestorm.
Well, for the average person, though, in Southwest Florida, around Collier County and Fort Myers and Naples and all that, I mean, is it really a big deal? Is it just sort of like, well, you know, this has been going on. It hasn't been a problem in the past. Why worry now?
Well, new technology has sort of upped the ante. There's a lot of, Curtis Morgan with the Miami Herald wrote a story about 2 years ago about how Southwest Florida might become a boom town for oil. And, you know, maybe not for natural gas, which is what fracking is usually used for, but, you know, to break up ground to just extract more oil, fracking can be used. It's like a method of pumping a lot of sand, water, and chemicals down just to sort of break up the earth. And I guess, you know, because, you know, we heard word that there is a company using that method, at least in one well, I think people are saying that this could happen anywhere near them. Probably not in the conservation lands, but if it can happen in, you know, Lake Trafford there in Collier County, I think a lot of people are thinking this could affect their life. But as of right now, it's only happening in one well, right? We only have one example of a fracking-like incident taking place. And, you know, it wasn't approved by the DEP, our state agency in charge of, you know, regulating the environment here. So in the future, I guess the fear is it could, but right now it's sort of located in one place and that company's already been fined.
Ashley Lopez from member station WGCU in Fort Myers. Take care. You're listening to Capitol Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, wildfires are a year-round threat to Floridians due to the state's warm weather, which can produce dry and flammable foliage. June marks the end of the peak fire season. But while wildfires pose great risks to people, places, and property, Regan McCarthy reports the only bird unique to the state thrives in areas that have been burned.
Florida's scrub jays look something like a blue jay, the blue bird you might see eating sunflower seeds in almost any North American backyard with a bird feeder. The biggest differences between the two are scrub jays don't have the crest on top of their heads that blue jays have. And while blue jays are a more muted denim blue, scrub jays are a vibrant cerulean. That and the Florida bird is known for its surprisingly friendly disposition. Here at Oscar Scheer State Park, volunteer Ron Anthony is introducing hikers to one of a dozen families of scrub jays that live in the park. As Anthony holds out his hand and calls to one of the birds, it flies right to his palm, posing for a few pictures. And that's not unusual. Just a week earlier, Anthony says a scrub jay perched on top of his hat and tagged along for a piece of the scrub tour he leads.
When I first moved in here 16 years ago, we had them in our backyard and in various areas around the golf course. But of course, they're gone now. I think it's very important that we preserve the species, and we got to start bringing them back. We can't wait much longer.
Anthony says the scrub jay's friendly nature is part of what landed the bird on the threatened species list, because it makes people want to feed them. A criminal offense, by the way. When people feed the jays, it can cause them to mate in the winter, which means their babies are born during the wrong time of year when the right bugs and sources of nutrition aren't available. They're also on the list because their habitat is dwindling. Florida scrub jays live only in Central Florida in a specific scrub environment.
This is this piece of machinery right here is called a roller chopper. And the roller chopper is what we use to restore some of our scrubby flatwoods and pine flatwoods. And what it does is it chops up the palmettos and reduces the fuel so we can make it more readily available to do prescribed fire.
That's Oscar Scheer Park Manager Tony Clements. On a behind-the-scenes drive around the park, he's surveying areas rangers have just burned as part of an effort to restore the scrub. And just days later, some of them are still smoking. Clements says fire is a natural way to preserve the scrub habitat. It reduces the number of larger trees, makes room for new scrub oaks to grow, and even burns some areas bare so the jays can bury acorns in the sand and other animals can live.
That's why it's important that we set aside some of these natural areas so we can manage them the way that nature intended, and prescribed fire is the way that nature intended these areas to be kept. Again, because Florida is the lightning capital of the U.S., many of the plants and animals in Florida, in fact most of them, need that fire regime, that fire process to come through and do the work.
Officials started a prescribed fire treatment in the park in the 70s. Soon after that, scrub jays moved right in. By the 90s, the park's scrub jay population began soaring, reaching a population high of 123 jays. But Clemens says Hurricane Charley interrupted the project, taking attentions elsewhere, and more established trees started to grow, which he says makes for a bad home for the birds.
Because those pine trees are stressing out the birds because they don't know if there's predators up in there, so they're going to focus a lot of their time on watching those trees and not on, breeding, not on caching acorns and those things that they need to survive.
And because of that, the park recently started logging, cutting trees down to reduce the number of larger pines and turn the area back into the scrub habitat nature intended. It's a move Clements says surprised some of the park's neighbors.
I get that visceral feeling whenever I see a tree cut. I'm like, oh my God, what are they doing? But it's for the greater good to restore the habitat.
And Clemens says if the park maintains a regular prescribed burn program, no more logging will be needed to preserve the scrub. Right now, Clemens says the park houses about 26 jays, but he worries they're getting older and their fledglings aren't doing well. He says the improvements at the park will help, but efforts need to go beyond that. He says it's up to the community to help preserve neighboring scrub habitat and avoid interrupting the birds' natural behavior by feeding them. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Nick Evans, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol. Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. And from Florida Tax Watch, the Florida Council of 100, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plan, proud sponsors of the Prudential Productivity Awards program, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas since 1989. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.